Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Hi guys, welcome back to Investigating Angel. Today we are talking about season one, episode seven, The Bachelor Party, our first Doyle-centric episode. I am excited to actually learn about Doyle. Like, he's probably been the number one most mysterious character on the show so far. I think even Kate has had a backstory so far and not Doyle. So this is really exciting to talk about him and kind of how he relates to Angel. And also just on its own, I think this episode is really fun and enjoyable to watch. But what did you think of it, Leia?
I agree. I really enjoyed it. I didn't realize how many similarities this episode has with the next one that we're going to be watching. And also just a lot of callbacks and stuff. It was really interesting. Really fun. There's an appearance by that demon guy from Anne, which was really
Ken.
Interesting. Ken, but he's not Ken. but no, it was really enjoyable. Definitely like this one.
Yeah, I like it a lot too. It's so funny because I wonder if my feelings or our feelings on these episodes, they just seem to be so vastly different from the majority of the articles and reviews that I read and watch, because I feel like every episode I'm like, this episode is so good. It's always, oh, this episode is awful. It's boring. It's the second worst episode of the season so far. And I'm like, wait,
somebody
what?
Said that about this episode?
Yeah, they said it's the second worst
when
episode
when there's
of
I
the
Fall
season.
To Pieces and Lonely Heart and Room with the View.
And Room with the View. Oh, there it is. Yes. No, someone said that. I don't understand it all. And I wonder if it's just because maybe we appreciate characters – or different characters than the majority of other people that are reviewing this. I don't know. I don't want to say the majority of people that are watching the show because I don't know how most everybody feels. But I'm finding that not a lot of people like Angel. And again, we've talked about this before. It's
really
not a – yeah, I know. I know you're so shocked by this.
How could that be? I'm so shocked and appalled.
I don't know. But people – are not really into Angel. And so, and maybe even Doyle. I don't know. But for instance, okay, so when Room with a View, we talked about how we felt like Doyle's arc kind of got pushed forward a little bit more than Cordelia's. And in this episode, it's so interesting how I feel like Cordelia's arc kind of got pushed forward a little bit more, not more than Doyle's, because Doyle, I think it was still good to have backstory and just kind of see him moving forward a little bit. But I was pleasantly surprised with Cordelia's arc. And I feel like she has more of an arc in this one, or at least more of a character progression than with Room with a View. And I think this was the first episode that I genuinely was like, I like this new Cordelia and I hope they keep it up.
I agree. I think these, this episode and the next one and the one after are actually three really important episodes that are kind of a turning point for the season until the next turning point, the good turning point.
trying to speak as vaguely as possible.
I just feel like this season there's waves of good and bad, and I feel like the next three episodes are definitely the peak of the beginning of the season. And they all kind of tie in together because
yes they do.
The next three episodes are important, a lot, really important for Doyle, really important for Angel in particular.
So some of the reviews I was reading, they were talking about how they felt like the pacing between this show and Buffy. So a lot of people at this point are watching Buffy and Angel back to back. So I think it was Buffy goes first and then Angel. I can't remember which one comes first. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because, you know, people will be watching The Initiative, which is the episode that comes out right before this one. And Tabby Lee and I just covered that one last week. And I don't know if you've seen that episode recently, but it is chock full. It is an episode that feels longer than what it actually is because there's so much that's happening, so many revelations and things that are moving forward and, you know, all this stuff. I mean, you have Spike in there, you have Riley like being revealed as a part of the Initiative, and then you have the revelation of the Initiative and right. and then Willow getting over Oz. Like there's just so much happening. And then there's this episode. And so I wonder if a lot of people struggle with the pacing of this episode because it's significantly slower than the Initiative. And one of the reviews I was reading was saying that they felt like people, and they themselves in particular, they felt like with how fast and sped up Buffy is and then just how slow burn Angel has been, it's probably like a rough, jarring transition to go from one to the other when you feel like you're already shifting into full gear on Buffy versus Angel. But I don't know.
I feel like they're different shows. Like, I don't understand why that's an issue. If they're like, I get it if it was a first time watcher and they're watching both shows at the same time. But, you know, and we've talked about this, like, we both would recommend watching them separately your first go. Mm-hmm. But as like a seasoned viewer and somebody who's watched the shows multiple times, like, I most certainly don't feel that way because they're very different shows. And this is Angel's first season. Like,
yes.
They're not just going to go in full swing like they were doing in Buffy season 4. Like, you could say the first few episodes, the first however many episodes of season 4 of Buffy are just Monster of the Week episodes. They're mm-hmm. very slow. Nothing really happens except for, like, mm-hmm. the Oz and Willow stuff, I believe. Or is that before? Or after?
Yeah, that happened right before.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. It just feels like I don't really understand that complaint if you're looking at them from like two different shows. I think that's like kind of unfair. Like, I don't know. But I guess everyone has like different viewing experiences.
Yeah.
But I don't agree. And I think that they're wrong.
I think you have valid points. The fact that it's a brand new show, it's still finding its feet. But also I think people just tend to underestimate the character development that's happening in these episodes like this one, where we are not just pushing forward Doyle, we're pushing forward Cordelia, and we're pushing forward Angel. And like you said, this episode really, it kind of sets up a trilogy in a lot of ways. You have this episode, you have the next Angel episode, and then you have the one after that. But there's also stuff happening over on Buffy that tie into these things. So really, it's kind of like 4 or 5 different episodes that all get kicked off with this one. But not even kicked off. Like, I would say the next few episodes we've been leading up to them for the past few episodes, even like since, well, I would say In the Dark, but I would say from the City of. Like, we've been going somewhere. There's a reason why, and we'll talk about it in a second, but there's a reason why we keep opening and ending episodes with Angel in the dark by himself reading a book. And this time, like, we kind of got an idea of why he's doing that. And so there, it's very clear that Angel's not over Buffy. He's not supposed to be over Buffy. And this episode is just kind of a taste into what's going to happen next. So
what's coming. Yeah.
Yep.
I think a lot of the criticism is, like you said, people are kind of watching the show and they don't really care to take a look into what's happening with Angel. I feel like people are, I'm waiting for something to happen with Cordelia, or like whatever new characters are going to come in. And I just feel like you're watching this show and you're missing out on so many really cool things just because you have this like weird dislike of the main character.
Yes, I think people are missing a lot simply by just not appreciating Angel. They're missing out on character development in their own favorite characters simply because they don't see how the characters all relate and mirror each other in certain scenarios. Not all the time, but So speaking of the next episode and where we're all heading and stuff, I have a couple of announcements for you guys. So pull out your calendars. We've got a couple of dates for you all to remember and to write down. So this next episode, I Will Remember You, is a really big one. I won't go into why because spoilers and all that stuff, but Tabby and Leah are going to be with us next week, my co-hosts over at Becoming Buffy Podcast. And not only are we recording I Will Remember You, but we are also celebrating the 100th episode that Tabby, Lee, and I have recorded, which happens to be I Will Remember You. I know it's not technically Investigating Angel, but it's still one of my podcasts, and it's one that Tabby and Leah are going to be on. So it felt very appropriate that it was I Will Remember You. We're going to be celebrating over on Investigating Angel podcast on our Instagram. We have a giveaway over there for you guys. And that week is just going to be chock full of stuff. We're going to do a live watch party on our Discord. We're going to watch I Will Remember You on Wednesday, November 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. And we are going to be doing a live trivia night. Buffy and Angel Trivia Night on Thursday, November 3rd, the day that I Will Remember You drops. We're going to be doing that at 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time as well. So you can find all that information over on our Instagram. We'll either announce it this week or next week with all that information. If you want to join in the watch party on our Discord, you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Instagram and we will send you guys the link. But yeah, we're so excited. It's just a fun way to celebrate 100 episodes, a fun way to celebrate Buffy and Angel, and just a chance to talk with you all about the show Angel. It's just, it's going to be so fun. So I hope to see you guys at the live. I hope to see you guys at the watch party. Go ahead and enter in our giveaway. It's just going to be so much fun. So head on over there, email us if you have any questions, and it's going to be an absolute blast. So, okay, let's talk about the episode because clearly we have a lot of thoughts. All right, written by Tracy Stern, directed by David Straighten, aired November 16th, 1999. So bachelor parties. We all know what bachelor parties are. I don't feel like I have to go into too much depth and detail about this, but in my research, I did find a couple of interesting things that I feel like kind of tie into what we were just talking about. So bachelor parties actually started in Sparta in the 5th century BC. It's considered a rite of passage, and it marks a transition from singleness to married life, as we all know. Bachelorette parties actually did not become a thing until the 60s, which is kind of crazy.
So it was always a bros thing.
It was always a bros thing, which, you know.
Yeah, makes sense.
We all know why that is. Yeah. In this case.
For the strippers.
For the strippers, yeah. Oh, yes. We'll get to that. So in this case, it hopefully marks the beginning of Doyle's transition moving on with his life and his acceptance of himself. But also, this episode marks the beginning of a really important next few episodes for Angel, like we said before. And so I think it's so interesting that it's named The Bachelor Party because it's signifying a transition and something big's going to happen. So
yeah,
I thought that was aptly named.
Yeah, that's, I've never thought of it that way. That's a good point.
And the Buffyverse does that. Like there's the episode that's coming up later in Buffy season 5. It's Into the Woods. I don't know if you remember what happens in that one, but from that point on, things just get really dark on the show. And that is the first episode that it happens. And Into the Woods, like we've talked on Buffy before about how the woods in fairy tales and stuff is, it signifies a time of change and transition for a character. It's where they do a lot of growth. And yeah, so it, like it's interesting how a lot of times episode titles foreshadow things that are going to happen like episodes and even seasons later. So I'm a sucker for that. So Angel is back in his office, sitting at his desk, reading yet another book. And it's so funny because when I first was watching this at the very beginning, before I'd seen the rest of the episode, and I forgot about the fact that he has Buffy's picture in his books. So I was watching this and I was like, okay, this has been a theme for a while. I was like, I feel like they're going somewhere with this. I was like, they're intentionally trying to show that he's still struggling to connect and relate with the outside world. Doyle is once again coming in, trying to pull him out. And I'm like, I'm really curious to see where, like, where he's going to go and what breaks him out of it. And then the reveal just a few seconds later of, or minutes later of, like, the picture falling out. And I was like, nah, there it is.
Ah. See, I happen to think that Angel looks very peaceful and like he's having a lovely night with his book in his comfy chair, and people just need to leave him alone.
Do you think he's writing fan fiction about himself and Buffy?
No, I think he's reading like a romance novel and he's thinking about Buffy.
Yeah, he has her picture right there, and it's like some blonde girl and her lover, and they cannot be together. And
my God.
He Angel. Is. He's so
I'm
is.
Just saying, people need to just let him read and enjoy his night.
So Doyle's like, hey, let's go out. Let's go to a sports bar, which I feel like David Boreanaz in real life would have been like, heck yes, let's go to a sports bar. I did write down. Doyle's like, come on, you know, they have trivia games on the internet now. You can challenge against drunks around the world. And I was like, I feel like this would be us, Leia, if we lived near one another. I would be like, Leia, there's a Buffy and Angel trivia night. Let's go. And you'd be like, please, I'd like to sit at home and read my fan fiction, Sarah.
Yeah, please. Hey, I would be down for Buffy and Angel trivia. That you sounds like a fun night to me.
You probably would, but that's probably the only thing that would get you out of your house, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not going to a sports bar.
There's I don't want to go one either.
No way. Yeah. Oh my God, all those men and they're screaming.
No, thank you.
All of those drunk people.
I could just go home to my parents' house and they'll be screaming at a sports TV. Like, I don't need to go to a sports bar. Sorry, Dad. Love you. On the off chance my dad's listening to my Buffy podcast. Totally not. But, you know, love you, Dad. Go Steelers. All right. So Cordelia comes into the office. I just love how timeless this dress is. This is something you could totally wear today. And
she looks so pretty.
She looks gorgeous. Her hair is beautiful. I love that it's kind of pulled back, but it's still down. She just looks so girlish. It's amazing.
She looks her age, like this episode in particular. She looks like she's 19, which we've talked about how they've like aged her up so much. But and obviously Charisma's like older. I think she's in her late 20s, early 30s. But mm-hmm. she looks like a 19-year-old in this episode and really beautiful.
It is interesting, though. I will note, obviously, I know she's dressing up to go somewhere, but I thought it was so interesting that her outfit is black, which is classy, but that's the darkest color we've seen her in pretty much since the first episode in City of, where she was trying to break into the It crowd and Hollywood and all that stuff. And I think knowing what we know later on in this episode where, you know, she's starting to realize maybe I don't fit in here anymore. Maybe this is not what I want. I think this is a symbol of like, I don't fit these clothes anymore. Like, this isn't me. Like, I'm more, because you know how she goes and she changes back into like a red shirt, I think later on, how it's kind of like she wants more vibrancy and color. And I think it's just kind of a symbol of like, that's that Cordelia's changed since the first episode that we've seen her in this season or in this show, which I think is kind of cool. So they intentionally make her extra biting in this scene. And I was kind of like, ugh, okay, I'm over it, but I'll forgive her because of what happens later on. So then we see Pierce. And Pierce is so stereotypically Wall Street, like comes in with his suit and everything. And Angel and Doyle.
Boring.
They walk in there like, Dad. And he's like, so what time are you going to have her home? And Cordelia's like, don't wait up for me. We're going, do you work, Pierce? I work futures and options market. Good, good. Tell me where you're going. Tell me where I can contact you. Tell me what time you're going to be home. Cordelia's it's like, so we cannot cute. Get out of here fast enough.
At first, I was like, why did Cordelia have him pick her up at the office? Like, why is she here? Why wouldn't he just pick her up from her new beautiful apartment? And then I was like, no, this is actually so smart because you don't know this guy, so it's so much better and safer to have him meet you at like, but then it's also her workplace, so like what if he shows up there later? But I guess it's better than like her apartment. But anyway, I came to the conclusion that it was a great idea because that way he doesn't know where she lives and she can be like safe in that way. And she has her friends there just in case something were to happen. So good job, Cordelia. Yeah.
I think you're giving her a little too much credit. I'm pretty sure that Cordelia – I don't think Cordelia thought that through at all. I'm pretty sure the writers were like, we just need Doyle and Angel to see this guy. Maybe she was working late, but it is weird that she like brought her really nice fancy dress with her and then changed. Yeah. Like, where is she changing?
Maybe she was working late. Maybe she just changed in Angel's apartment.
I mean, she basically moved in there.
But she came from like the outside. So where did she come from?
That's why I'm confused. Yeah. Did she just wear that dress all day while working at the office?
I don't know. A lot of thoughts. I was like, what's happening? Why are we here?
we're here because the writers wanted us here, but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to know, with how fast she was trying to get him out of there, I was like, has this happened before with, like, previous dates? Or does she just not want him to meet Doyle and Angel because she's embarrassed by them? Take your pick. I feel like it could be either one, honestly.
It could be either one, yeah. I think they're trying to show us that they've, like, the three of them have developed a very, like, familial bond. Yeah. Like, they're her older brothers and they're, you know, looking out for her.
So Doyle is all discouraged. He's like, she's not going to fall for my ample but unpretentious charms, is she? Angel points out that she just likes to brag about, you know, her family's old money when they used to have it. And she likes guys who have a lot of money. And Doyle sits down on the couch and grabs one of Angel's books. And it's really interesting because I was trying desperately to see if this was the book that Angel had when he was back in the office. So I, like, watched him. And the book kind of disappears from his hands while he's standing there after Cordelia leaves. But the camera is panned on his – from his shoulders up. It's quite possible that he turned and just plopped the book over onto the couch, and that's the one that Doyle picked up. I don't know. That's my headcanon. My other headcanon is that Angel keeps a picture of Buffy in every single one of his books.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you agree with that one? Okay.
I agree with that one. Yes, yeah. That's the one.
Okay,
it's just – it's his bookmark. It's different pictures, and he just has a different one to look at in every book. Why not?
I'm just imagining the fact that Buffy, because I'm pretty sure it was one of her senior pictures from season three.
It was a season three promotional photo.
Yeah, but I'm headcanoning. Headcanoning. Is that even a word? My headcanon.
No, that's one of the pictures from, wasn't it from the episode Homecoming when she was running?
That's what I'm saying. I think it is. I think it might
be. And I feel like maybe she went to Angel's mansion and she was like, hey, baby, I need help. And you're very, like, artsy.
That's right. We said that he took the pictures for her, right?
Yeah, like, maybe maybe he was like, here, let's go out into my beautiful garden. That's decrepit, but that's okay. Let's go out there. There's some night blooming jasmine, and it's the daytime, so there's no jasmine.
I'll stand in the shadows and you can stand near the
wall. Maybe they did it like when the sun was starting to set. So like it wasn't direct sunlight, like that beautiful, like the twilight, right?
Oh yeah, of course. Buffy knows her angles and she knows her light.
Yes. And Angel brought out his like expensive camera that he acquired at some point during his 242 years or whatever.
He has statues and pieces of art. Why wouldn't he have a camera?
And he like took pictures for her and he goes, I got you. And he went and he got them like printed and then helped her make the posters.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this like really happened.
Yeah. I know. When we did Homecoming, we hypothesized that Angel was the one that took the headshots for her. Because definitely. I, with how artistic he is, he 100% would be creative like that. And the person taking those headshots, there's just a lot of love behind there. Yeah. I don't think Joyce was the one doing that, you know?
No.
And it wasn't even a studio either. So, yes. No, headcanon. Mm-hmm. And then Buffy signed the back of it saying forever, you know?
Always. Not forever. Always.
Oh, always. Yes. Always. That's the thing that they say.
Always.
I know. It is always. You're right. Great. I forget. Shame on me. Bad Sarah. So the picture falls out. Doyle is like, wow, she's something. You know, thinks she likes a guy with an Irish accent. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, she does.
It's such a good picture too. She looks so beautiful. Oh,
yeah, it's just heartbreaking. And I was like, oh, we're going there. I remember the first time I watched this, I was like, oh, Buffy, I'm like so like, sorry for any interaction. We're actually going to talk about Buffy here.
And Angel's face just like falls and he's like, yeah.
I do love the interactions, and I think this is probably just our running theme for the season so far. The interactions between Doyle and Angel have been really good. I think they understand each other in a way that no one else kind of does in their lives. The fact that, you know, being part demon, the fact that they can't be with the women they love or care about, you know, I think that Doyle – and I really love that Doyle, once he realizes that it's Buffy, immediately is like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, he understands. Like, he just watched Cordelia go off with, I already forgot his name, you know, freaking
Pierce.
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan out there. So then Doyle has a vision. He's like, it's a guy. Vampires are going to eat him. So then they leave to go rescue the kid. Cut to the restaurant. Pierce is dull as a doornail, just
I feel so bad going for Cordelia.
On and on about the stock market. And she has this glazed look in her eyes and she's like, okay, oh no, God. I don't mind. And it's so interesting because I feel like in the past, Cordelia would have just sat there and smiled and laughed and done whatever.
Smiled and laughed. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so that she could end up with this guy and have the money and the life that she wants. And so it was really interesting to see her like not even kind of wanting to play along with it. She's over it.
Mm-hmm. We've all been there. On dates like that. Oh my God. It's so terrible. Like, oh my God, my mom's calling. I have to go.
Yeah, right. I know. This is when you have like a friend and it's unfortunate that you have to be kind of like, hey, mm-hmm. call me at this time. And if I'm having a really crappy date, I'll have an out and I can get out. Like how many of us have a fail safe when we have to go on dates and parties we don't want to? And because we've had experiences like this.
Terrible.
So then we have Angel and Doyle fighting in the vampire nest. And I love the contrast between how boring and proper Cordelia's time is, but that's the life that she thinks she wants. Cut to Angel and Doyle. And I think also highlighting like these are the demons. The demons are out fighting while Cordelia is 100% human. She doesn't have to fight these same battles that they do. Mm-hmm. But I love this scene. I think this might be my favorite fight scene yet. It feels very comic book.
It does, yeah.
And like they have the camera kind of like glide over as Angel and this very buff female are fighting through the different rooms and you kind of cut through the fourth wall. And then even when Doyle like falls down and he has his demon face on, he looks at the camera and he says, I hate that part. Like it just, again, felt very comic book. So props to the director.
These vampires were just crazy looking. Like just.
They're very scary.
They looked like they were like Spike's friends.
They look like they're part of some like punk rock band. Like yeah. The drummer with his like bun.
Like, what are they doing here? Like, is this where they practice for their punk rock band? Like, is this where probably. They come for rehearsal and they like eat people at the same time?
Yeah. They just use the people as noise dampeners in their room.
Ah, yes.
But no, I loved this. I loved this scene. I thought it was really great. So then they have the guy that the poor guy that they rescued. They're trying to take him back to his place. And Angel's like, hey, why do you not fight in your demon form? You're clearly stronger. And Doyle's like, I just don't like to fight like that. And Angel's like, this isn't a spelling bee. Nobody expects you to fight fair. Like, use what you have, man. Angel's probably like, please pull your weight. I'm so tired.
Please, somebody help me, please. But that's interesting. I don't think we've – this is something new that we just learned about Doyle's demon powers is that he is, like, stronger when he's in his demon form, which is really interesting because I feel like usually if you're a demon, like, Angel is a vampire, but he's just as strong in his, like, human face as he mm-hmm. is in his vampire face. Mm-hmm. Just like other – I don't know if we've met other demons that are – that can change, but this is interesting because kind of gets you thinking like Doyle could live like a completely normal life, which he does, and then turn into a demon and be like a superhero, which is really cool.
It is really cool, but it makes him uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So Angel's like, all right, just go back home. I can handle it. And then we have like, again, another like really interesting shot where like cuts forward to this like burly vampire with the top knot. I was like, hello there.
I was like, clearly he's going to, like, follow them.
Yeah, I was like, well, subtlety is not going to be this episode's forte for sure.
No.
So Doyle gets followed back to Angel Investigations, goes inside while the top knot vamp watches him. Just as Cordelia and Pierce pull up and – it's so funny how you know exactly what's happened. Pierce is like, man, I'm really sorry you're not feeling well. And you're like, nah. Nah, clever Cordelia. See what you're doing.
Well played.
Yeah, she's like, me too.
I'm sick.
Yeah. Exactly. And he's like, wow, you want me to take you home? And she's like, no, my car is here, which that was news to me. I didn't know Cordelia has a car. Maybe it was just like a bluff so that she could walk home.
Maybe. I feel like I mean, you are more familiar with Los Angeles, but I feel like you need a car to get around there. You can't just like
Los Angeles places. Is not New York. You have to have a car. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Pierce is all gentlemanly like right now. He's like, let me walk you. I'm not really sure about this neighborhood. And Top Knot comes out. You're right. It's crappy.
And then Pierce runs like a little bitch.
Takes off in his car. And I was like, well, yeah. Well, Cordelia's instincts were right on the money. He sucks. Doyle comes out, has a really sick line. He's like, hey, I'm the one you followed here. It's me you want. And I was like, whoa, Doyle. Wow. Because, okay, the last time Doyle tried something like this in the dark, what did he say? He was like, he said something when he was going after the pedophile, and he goes and like gets completely walloped and thrown into the corner. So I thought it was kind of interesting that he's like that willing to take down this vampire, but.
Anything for Cordelia.
Honestly, really impressed that he hits the guy's foot. He's like sitting there like, oh no, I don't know where I'm going to be able to hit that it won't hurt Cordelia. So I'm going to aim for like the hardest part of the body to hit.
That was which a is really good shot too. Like he I know. Really just, I don't know if it was like lucky or if he like meant to do like that, but yeah, like it worked out pretty well. Like that's actually a pretty good spot too, because it just kind of like, I don't know.
It impairs him without, you know, having to harm Cordelia. Like if he hit her foot, it wouldn't be that bad. Yeah. It'd be life-ending for Cordelia because, you know, then she'd have to be in a cast. But so they scuffle. Doyle gets the top knot guy, turns him to dust. And Cordelia's like, wow, you're so brave. And I was like, Cordelia is having an awakening. Like you could tell like light bulb went off over her head. Like Is Doyle hot?
I feel like this is very similar to when Xander saved her from Daryl in Some Assembly Required. And she was just like, I just want to say thank you. That was really brave what you did. Like, it's almost like a man needs to save her life in order for her to, like,
think so highly true. Of him. Yes.
Which is, I mean, like,
same. It's not until you lay down your literal life for me that I will let you go out with me. I need to see some form of commitment here, and nothing less will do. But honestly, I think that kind of shows just how self-centered Cordelia is, and that she literally can't get past the fact that Doyle is not what she checks off in her mind as rich and someone of fame or whatever it is.
But those expectations are starting to break as they are this episode. Yeah.
Passion the Nerd also says, he goes, it is interesting that she describes both Xander and Doyle as fixer-uppers when the lacking characteristics that make them so, namely wealth and success, are things that she is also lacking.
Ooh, burn.
Which is really funny. Again, it all points back to how self-centered Cordelia is.
Yeah.
She's looking for the things that she wants.
What a partner can give her. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And she's not thinking of it as, oh, like someone who cares about me, someone who loves me. Like she's kind of thinking about it in a new light. And like she talks about later, something of substance. For the first time, she's going, wow, Doyle has substance. And I think that speaks honestly more for her character than it does for Doyle, because we've always 100%. Known Doyle has substance. Cordelia is just now figuring that out. And that is showing that maybe Cordelia is starting to gain some substance in her character, you know?
Finally, Jesus Christ.
I'm keeping that in. Yeah, you're not wrong. We hope to see this about two or three episodes back, but you know what? I'll take it.
Yeah.
So Doyle's like, you think you could say that without so much shock in your voice? You're stepping on my moment of manliness here. And Cordelia's like, I'm sorry. I'm just – and then she says grateful. And again, like you said, Some Assembly Required – it's brief moments like this and how she was with Xander and how she was in Helpless with Buffy that I go, yes, I want to see more of this Cordelia who's genuinely humble, who recognizes that, wow, there are other people out there other than just me, you know?
Yep.
So Angel Investigations, Angel is sitting at his desk. I adore this scene. I adore it so, so much. I think that Angel and Cordelia's friendship is one of my favorite things that's coming out of this show. How Angel just like is really compassionate and kind and listens to her. And Cordelia's just kind of rambling. I love that she, well, I did write down, I was like, Cordelia does need some girlfriends because she just keeps talking about this to Angel.
I just feel like Angel is like he's listening, but he's like perplexed. He's like, what is going on right now? Like, yes, I mean, I'll listen, but I have no idea what's happening. Like, he's just lost. He just doesn't know what's happening.
I love how he's always doing something else while she's talking to him. like almost as if she comes in the room while he's busy and just starts talking no matter what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's learned to like multitask.
He's like, all right, I guess this is what's happening now.
Throw back random sentences back to her and hope that something sticks. Maybe she'll leave this time. And then Cordelia says probably the most insightful thing I have heard her say yet on the show. She says, all of a sudden, rich and handsome isn't enough for me. Now I expect a guy to be all brave and interesting and rich and handsome. But, you know, she didn't say that part. And it's your fault, both of you. And Angel's like, what now? What do you want, woman?
He's like, what did I do? Please release me.
And he says, well, maybe not. Maybe you're changing. That could be a good thing. And I was like, Angel, so sweet that you're seeing the best in Cordelia as well. And then she says he was really beat up, but you know, the first thing he asked, are you okay? I mean, that's like substance, right? And Angel over there in the corner stops what he's doing and realizes, oh, hey, I actually may be able to wingman here, and like Cordelia's having a moment. Let's see if I can like – he's like waiting for her to kind of like ding, 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 ding. Yeah. And he's like sitting there like, yes, yes, you're so close. And then she like misses the mark. He's like, okay, well, I guess we'll go with that for now. And then we get a Xander Harris shout out. We've been talking about Xander and Buffy in the same episode. I'm like, what is going on?
It's the X episode. This is all about exes.
Yeah.
Harry comes in shortly thereafter.
So then Angel's like, let's unpack this further. And Cordelia's like, well, all right, I'm going. Bye. And then she's like, she leaves. And Angel's like, now in charge of the phones. So like,
no, she you says, know. You missed the part where she was like, you know, I think this means that I have to get him a, like a mocha as a thank you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Which is really sweet. Like, she's it just like, sweet. You know what? Like, I'm going to say thank you, and right. I think you're getting right. a coffee would be really lovely.
She is thinking outside of herself. She's thinking about something that she would want to have, and she's going mm-hmm. to get that for Doyle. Yes, you're right. It is very sweet. Okay, my bad. Sorry, Cordelia.
She's like, all right, we're going to go. You watch the phones, Angel. Angel's like, you guys are literally working. Like, what is happening once again? How did this Angel's like, happen to me? How did I get stuck doing all the work yet again?
And also being their therapist and trying to matchmake. Like he's doing everything over here. And yet when he wants to be by himself to read a book and stare at Buffy's face. No one will leave him alone.
Like, just leave him alone. He does so much. I feel like Angel is just like, he's like so reliable. Like, he's just there. He helps out. He just does what needs to be done. And all he wants to do is to sit in the dark at night and read a book. And it's just like, just let him do that.
I think, yeah. And I think as we learn, Doyle, his insecurities make it so that he doesn't want to go alone. He wants someone else to come with him. So I think that mm-hmm. I'm starting to wonder if a lot of his like, hey, you need connection with humans thing is a projection on Doyle's part.
Ooh. Yes.
That's my hypothesis, because we've seen a lot of like mirroring of Doyle and Angel. And yes, I would agree. Angel probably does need to have more connection with the outside world, but I don't see Doyle out there doing anything. And so I wonder if it is a lot of projection.
That's very interesting. I like that.
I think that this episode hints to that. So then Doyle is reenacting his entire fight because, I mean, why wouldn't you? Just maybe not in broad daylight where Cordelia can walk in on you at any moment. Like, go to the bathroom and do it, you know? That sounded so dirty. You know what I mean? But Cordelia comes in. I do appreciate that she doesn't, like, make fun of him too much. She does make fun of him a
little
bit.
Too much, yeah.
Yeah, you know. And then she says, I was thinking that I haven't been entirely fair to you. And I was like, what is happening? We're seeing growth and character development for Cordelia past one scene. Like, this is now scene number three. Is mm-hmm. this going to be a new thing? Because I'm here for it. So they start to have a moment, and then Harry comes in the room because, of course, no one can be 100% happy. And it's a little too early for them to get together because it's only episode 7. And Cordelia's like about ready to shoo her out of the room when she says Francis. And we realize that this woman knows Doyle and like knows him. And we are shocked to find out that this is his wife, not his ex-wife, his wife.
Eek.
Also, the actress who plays Harry is freaking gorgeous. And
she's
her hair
so pretty.
Is
her
stunning.
Hair. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. The curls. Yep.
I love it. I love it. So I'm confused. You're confused. Cordelia's confused. We're all confused. What's happening? Angel just like walks right in and Cordelia's like, Angel, this is Doyle's wife. And Angel, ever the
Angel's
loyal.
Like, hey, what's going on?
Yeah. Completely doesn't even question it.
I wonder if like he knew. I don't know. It seems like he kind of knew, but also I don't think he did.
I don't think he knew. Yeah. And the reason why I don't think so is because of the like the past episodes where he was telling like Room with a View where he tells Doyle, hey, like I'm going to need to know at some point. I think that right. he didn't know about this part.
He's just so like nonchalant about it. He's like, huh, cool. It's like how Oz would react.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, and then Doyle goes like, yeah, you know, I'm a private investigator now. This is my company. And Angel's like cool as a cucumber. Can't say
He's
that.
Like, yeah, man, you can have it.
And like Cordelia's like, wait, no, no. And Angel is just like, no, let him have his moment. Like, this is great. I was like, what a guy. He's so cool. So Cordelia's like, you guys were really married? And Harry's like, well, we still are, according to the paperwork. And Cordelia's like, okay, green card thing. And they're like, no, madly in love, which I really, really love this. I love this because not only is the Harry and Doyle storyline mirroring very obviously Angel and Buffy's, mm-hmm. but I love that it's a huge subversion because everything that we think is going to happen, like cliche-wise, doesn't. Doyle and Harriet loved each other. They still love each other. They're just not the right people for each other at this stage of life. The fact that they're still married, they aren't divorced. Like, I feel like all of the cliches were set up and then this episode knocked them down. And so it made it really interesting and refreshing to watch. Harry says, I guess times change because here we are 4 years later and living just fine. And I was like, that 4 years is very specific because it's been 4 years since Buffy and Angel really like started their relationship.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. So it's cluing us in that they are very subtly trying to make these parallels between the two couples.
Also, I think this is the first time where we kind of find out how old Doyle is. So he says that they broke up when he was 21 or they started mm-hmm. having issues when he was 21 and it's been 4 years. So he's at least 25, which mm-hmm. is crazy because everyone we've known so far has been like a teenager.
Yeah, they're all very, very young, which is hilarious because he does not look 25 at all.
No, he looks old.
Yeah, he really does. So they're in the middle talking. Then Richard pops in, which, okay. So I don't know about you, but I had a really hard time nailing down Richard in this episode because obviously they have him, they set him up as a red herring to be like, oh, he's going to be this really bad guy. And obviously, like, he does still end up being not super great in the sense that, like, his biggest problem was deceit. Like, he hid things from Harriet. But he also just seems genuinely clueless. Like, I think that he was trying to do things out of somewhat of the goodness of his heart, even if it was, like, really bad things. But I don't know. I can't get a read on him. Is he a bad guy or is he a good guy? Like,
I think he's, like you said, he's kind of clueless where it's like, you know, this is normal for him. Like, you know, the ritual sacrifice.
Okay.
And all that. Like, he's just, they're almost trying to make it seem like this is the custom and this is how, like, that, the demon culture is. And he's just going along with it because that's what his family does. And, like, yeah. you know, that's what you're supposed to do. But it's not, he's not doing it because he's, like, evil. It's just that, you know, he's like a humanized demon that's just following his own customs. But like maybe from yeah. like a different culture, like, you know, something like that. Like he's like a foreigner maybe.
But like he walks in and you're like, okay, no. Like if your ex asks you to wait in the car while she does this thing, like I don't think it's appropriate to just come in. But you get the sense that he's not doing it maliciously. So even though your guard is up, like you can't really hate him.
Even though he's Ken from Anne and he literally took Buffy to like a hell dimension.
Right, which makes you immediately want to hate him.
Yeah. It's so weird that they would use the same actor. Like we wouldn't notice.
I agree. In such a prolific role,
I feel like it kind
too.
Of colors like your opinion of him when you're watching this episode, because you're like, wait a minute, isn't this the same guy that was like snatching homeless people off the street and taking them to a hell dimension and then spitting them back out when they were like 80 years old? Like,
I agree. Like, I think they should have picked someone else. Like, choose to have him play a less prolific character in the show, because Anne is, well, I mean, Anne is just completely a phenomenal episode. It's not like it was like Bad Eggs or something that we just forget about. Like, Anne is really great.
If you were to think of two episodes that are very much, or I would just even say one, very much like the same vibe as Angel the series.
Yes.
Anne would be the episode that I would pick, and I would relate that back to.
Yeah, I agree. It's very odd choice.
Was this done on purpose? Like,
yeah. What is the symbolism here? What is the hidden meaning?
And I'm like, maybe they just like the actor, but I don't know.
I think that's probably what it is, because he was also in Serenity, the Firefly movie as well.
So. Oh, okay. So he's one of Joss's recycled actors.
So Richard comes in and insults Doyle unintentionally, way oversteps everything, and lets it slip that the wedding is a couple days off, which I was like, okay, Harriet, my girl, why are we saving this to the last minute? What if Doyle says no, you won't be able to get married? Like, you're putting a lot on here, you know?
I just love how he, like, goes right for Angel, beelines for Angel, and he goes, hi, it's so nice to meet you.
You've heard
so many great things. And I'm just like,
and Angel's like, it's not me. And he was like,
she didn't tell me you were such a handsome young man or something like that.
And then he sees Doyle and he's like, oh, that makes more sense. I was like, rude. Rude, Richard. Not starting off on a good foot here, man. All right. So then Angel clues in, is like, oh, okay, divorce papers, time to go, Cordelia. And she's like, no, I don't have any papers, reports, what? And just leaves. And Harriet's like, okay, you're making it worse, Richard. Go away. And he's like, I just want us all to be friends. I'm like, listen, dude. I mean, unless there's like children involved, there's really no need for him to be a part of your life. Like, come on. Anyway.
Definitely.
Whatever.
Well, we know why he's doing it.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot about the brains part of it all.
Eat Doyle's brains.
Yeah, but he just wants to eat his brains because he loves Harriet so much and wants to have a full relationship with her. Oh, and it should be an honor for Doyle. Like, I don't know. Anyway, some of these – this episode is great, but that whole aspect is a little weird and I don't quite understand it. But anyway, okay, moving on.
See, I mean, when we get there – but I mean, just to kind of backtrack what we were saying, I think it's really – it just goes to show like – it's almost like they're trying to show him as somebody from like a different culture with different customs, and he believes in his culture and his customs like so much. And like we said, it's not coming from a place of maliciousness, but it's just different, right? So
yeah.
I think that's maybe what we can relate it to in like real life, where, because I know some, like in different cultures, like for weddings, for example, there's celebrations that go on for like days before the actual wedding, and they have to do certain things before they can actually get married with like both families. So it kind of seems like a little bit of something like that. So I think that's how I would view it. In like the sense that it's not malicious, it's just like it's what he knows and it's his culture, so that's what he's doing. But like, it's make it demon, right? Where he's like gonna, the custom is that he has to eat, you know, Harriet's ex love's brains, which is so gross. But
no, I think you're onto something. I think they are trying to portray Richard as not a bad guy, as very affable and also incredibly embracing of his culture, because they're trying to contrast that with Doyle over here, just not at all.
Absolutely.
He's rejecting his demonness.
That's a great
point. So yeah, I think that's why they have that here. And it's highlighting at the end of the day that ultimately Harriet left Doyle because Doyle couldn't embrace himself and his culture. It's not that Harriet has issues with Doyle. It's Doyle has some growing he needs to do and some things he needs to like kind of reconcile within himself.
He needs to accept himself. All sides.
So everybody leaves. Harriet and Doyle have a really sweet exchange where you can just tell there's a lot of love there, even though like they've been apart for so long. But it's very clear that they're over, and Harriet asks him to sign the papers, and he's like, you know, I need some time. I need a couple days. So she gives him a couple days, which for your guys' information, in California, it's you actually cannot serve your spouse divorce papers they're literally the only adult that cannot legally serve you. Can be anybody else. It just cannot be your spouse, which is kind of funny. But
so this whatever. Is all invalid, Harriet.
Yep. Take it all back. You can't really, divorce really botching Doyle. This, Harriet. Send Richard back in. grab Cordelia. She'll do it for you.
Oh, yeah. Technically, Richard can serve him the papers. Imagine.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The what shade, a slap man. In the face. If your new fiance serves your ex divorce papers and is like, we need you to sign these ASAP because we want to get married.
Please and thank you. Oh,
my God.
Yeah.
That is so mean.
In like 3 days. So if you could be really prompt, that would be great. All right. So Harriet leaves. And then we have this exchange between Angel and Doyle. And it's really interesting because Angel asks Doyle if he would like a glass. And Doyle's like, no. Like, I mean, he grabs it eventually, but he's not really in the mood, which says a lot because we've gotten the sense that he has like a drinking and a gambling problem. Angel's like, all right, I want to know all the tea. So you guys haven't been in touch since you split up. And Doyle's like, well, we weren't even 20 when we got married. So they're very young, just like Buffy and Angel, crazy about each other. And when things go wrong and you're young like that, you don't just say, hey, thanks for the blender. I wish you well. You fight, you tear each other apart until one of you can't take it. And I was like, oh, wow, this feels a lot like the Lover's Walk speech from Spike. You'll fight and you'll shag. And like, I forget what else he says, you'll tear each other to pieces or whatever, but you'll never be friends.
You could see Angel kind of like looking off into like space thinking like, oh shit, like I know exactly how this feels like.
But like, obviously, I mean, we know what's coming up next. And for those of you who've seen the rest of the season and Buffy and stuff like that, like, I mean, I don't think it's any secret to say that we're clearly leading to a crossover. What's going to happen? Like Angel's like knows that something's going to happen to Buffy. The powers that be send him a vision. Of course, he's going to go see Buffy. So clearly we're leading to that. This is all leading to that. So they're trying to kind of like get us into that headspace. And so obviously this isn't going to match perfectly with Harriet and Doyle's experience, but I just think it's interesting how they're doing the parallels.
Just a side note, doesn't Richard kind of remind you of Riley?
Yes. Yes, I think that they were trying to do that intentionally.
It's very, like, Riley's very tied to the initiative and the way they do things, just like Richard is, like, very devoted to his, like, culture.
Mm-hmm.
They're, like, called boring at every turn. It's, like, this guy that's, like, the ideal image of, like, what a good guy is supposed to be like.
Yeah.
And it's, like, the new boyfriend that is kind of deceitful because Riley doesn't reveal his identity to Buffy until like the initiative. So I just feel they're like trying to kind of, I wish we could talk about this, but I feel like it's a spoiler.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we can talk about it a little bit because I mean, it's revealed that Riley is a part of the initiative, and the episode right before this, they're very clearly pairing Buffy and Riley together and moving them forward. So they're trying to show over on Buffy that Buffy's moving forward in her life with Riley. And here's Angel back here still pining over Buffy, watching her pictures. And now that Buffy is semi with Riley, I know they haven't really talked about it, but like the episode ended with them together, like moving in that direction. Right. Angel's going to show back up. What's this going to do? You know what I mean? And it's kind of almost like Harriet showing back up into Doyle's life too. So I don't know. With it's Richard, just very interesting.
Who is very similar to Riley.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mind blown.
I know. Look at us just piecing it together. Angel's like, you shouldn't blame yourself. I mean, you were kids. Doyle's like, what, the sneeze and sprout demon face? That's decidedly unnatural. Angel's like, what, you didn't tell her before you got married? And Doyle reveals he didn't know. He says, my mom figured that she'd wait to see, you know, instead of sprouting it on me. And his demon self presented when him and Harriet were married for at least a year or so, a couple years. And then they realized if we want to have kids, this is going to affect them, which again, the parallels of Angel not realizing about the curse stuff. Like he knew he was cursed, but he didn't know that like he'd revert back to Angelus until after him and Buffy had slept together. So again, I just love like the little metaphors there.
It's also really interesting that Doyle's demon side didn't appear until he turned 21. Also not something we've ever heard of before.
This episode is actually kind of a pivotal one when it comes to demonology in the Buffyverse, especially like with the soul. Does Richard have a soul? Because they've never said that demons don't have souls except for vampires. But as we've come to see, there's a lot of demons out there apart from vampires, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, a lot of questions. So they bond over the fact that both of them, you know, their demon side is ultimately what cost them from their relationship, or at least partially. And then, you know, Doyle's like wanting to see the worst about Richard. And he says something. He goes, "Exactly. I knew he was no good. And even though we're ex, I mean, it's still my duty to watch over her, right? But I can't go trailing after her intended myself. I mean, it just wouldn't look right." And then he asks Angel to do it, which I was like, okay. And again, knowing what you know about the end of the episode, like, and that's exactly what – yeah, that's exactly what Angel's going to try to do with Buffy. And so it's just – it's really interesting how Angel's kind of like, yeah, you probably shouldn't. But then as soon as he finds out that there's something wrong with Buffy, he's all like, let's go.
Yeah.
I do like how he says, "Don't tell Cordelia. She'll want to charge you." She would. She'd be like,
yeah,
you're going after your ex. We're charging you.
An invoice.
Yeah, right. So then we get one of my favorite shots from this episode. Very Batman. You have Richard walking along the street, and then the camera kind of pans up. You have Angel tailing him from the top of the building. Very comic book superhero Batman-esque, as he like kind of jumps down and like perches at the side of the building. I was like, oh, this is so good. Give me more of this. Like, eat it up. Richard has a package, goes into the restaurant kitchen, and he like they this just sus. Harriet's trying to open up this package, and he goes into the back of the room and like grabs a knife, turns into his like demon face, and you're like, oh no, he's gonna kill Harriet. And then Angel like bursts through a window. Man, just burst through the door or something.
He bursts through a lot of things this episode. Like, there's that like very famous shot of him bursting mm-hmm. through those double doors. And I'm just mm-hmm. like, damn, Angel has no respect for like property.
There's some really good yeah. moments of Angel in this episode. I was just like, whoo.
A few of them are in the opening credits too.
Yep.
Like
yep.
the one where he turns and he like turns into the vampire face, like that's to the my side.
Favorite.
And then the one where he like smashes the door open.
Yeah. I love it. I love
very
it.
Badass.
They really like are giving him some really epic shots in all of these episodes. I live for it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Angel's like, he's a demon. And Harriet's like, well, yeah, poor honey. And she like helps him up. And Angel's like, you knew he was coming for you with a knife. And she's like, that's for the box string. So they find out that he's an anomovic demon. They're peaceful, assimilated into their culture. And Harriet is actually an ethnodemonologist. And
very
she
cool.
decided to become one because of what happened with Doyle. And then we kind of get Harry's point of view. She talks about how she's like, yeah, I did kind of freak when I found out he was a demon, but I embraced it. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. So much that I like decided to devote my life to exploring this. And she's like, he didn't want to go out and mingle and meet other demons. He wanted to reject and push down his entire demon side.
Where have we seen that before?
Mm-hmm. Mm. He couldn't accept himself, and he was just really angry and hard to live with. And that's why they separated, which I love that twist. I think that is so, so good.
Another parallel with Buffy and Angel, where Buffy freaked at first, like in the episode Angel, and then she came around, and then she accepted him for who he truly was, like in What's My Line Part 1, when she like, you know, the kiss at the ice ring where she touches mm-hmm. his face and says, I didn't even notice. So it's kind of the same thing where it's like Angel and Doyle are unwilling to accept the demon sides of themselves, and that cost them really cherished and like deep relationships with the women they love. Which I think is another like really cool parallel between them. It just gives us more reasons for why these two guys work so well together, mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. as a team, because Doyle really does understand Angel and vice versa.
Right. Well, and it's just, and this lends credence to my theory that when Doyle's over there constantly trying to get Angel out of his shell, like that's because like that's what Harriet was trying to do with him. And so I think in right. a lot of ways, he's like, no, Angel, you're not going to make the same mistakes that I did. But he's over here, like, still continuing to make those mistakes, almost to the point where he, like, he doesn't want to change. He doesn't care about embracing himself, but he wants Angel to move forward. And it's like, no, 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 that's not how that works. Heal yourself and then worry about other people, you know?
Absolutely.
So Angel goes back to Doyle, and Doyle's like, he's a demon, and she's okay with it. She's like, you know, studying demons and all this other stuff. And they look up the anomovic demons. They used to have violent leanings, but now they gave up their orthodox teachings. And he goes, now they own a number of restaurants with pretty expensive windows. Angel has to go pay for the window. Love it.
He breaks two of their windows in this episode.
That's true. Bet she didn't pay for the second one, though.
So much property damage. You should get insurance.
And Doyle's like, I fully intend to chip in on that. No, you don't, Doyle. No, you don't. And so then Doyle's like, wow, like all that time when Harriet was telling me to embrace my demon self and to go out and all this stuff, he's like, I thought she was just pitying me. And he goes, wow, like I wasn't listening. And then he has that moment and he's like, Harriet didn't leave because of my demon side. She left because of me. And this reminds me so much of the amends speech where Angel tells.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the demon in me that needs killing. It's the man. Yeah.
Yep.
And Buffy's like, hell no. And kind of the same with Harriet. I never noticed how many callbacks and parallels there are in this just one episode.
Yeah.
It's really good. Cool.
I like it a lot. I'm really, really loving how each of these character episodes are kind of pointing back to Angel himself, but they're also revealing so much about Cordelia and Doyle. Maybe not so much with Cordelia. I feel like that one was not as great, but we still learned a lot about Angel in that, like Cordelia talking about how she feels like she doesn't deserve to earn redemption. And that's very much how Angel feels about himself. But this one in particular, I'm really loving how Doyle is his own person, has his own story that is different from Angel's, but there's still so many similarities that just make both their backgrounds so much richer, you know? Shangle's review talks about how Angel hates the demon part of himself, whereas Doyle hates both sides of himself. Angel chooses to brood and withdraw, whereas Doyle is more self-destructive. So both of them have the same problem, but how they're choosing to deal with it is very, very different. So Doyle is like, all right, I'm going to sign the divorce papers. And then we cut to Harry. And Richard's like, oh, wow, thank you so much. And they are like, hey, guess what? Like, you know, our bachelorette parties are this week. Like, you should come. And I was like, this is so weird.
It's awkward.
Yeah. Well, and then Harriet's like, oh, to Cordelia, you should come to my bachelorette party. I don't know any girls. And like, who just invites random people, let alone like the coworker of your ex? Like, it's like, we can all agree. This is all around just very uncomfortable. It doesn't make sense.
Like, you don't need to do this.
Except if you need to eat your fiance's ex's brains.
That's the only time when you should do this, is when you're trying to, like, you know, deceive your fiance's ex into coming there so that you could eat their brain.
But it says a lot that Doyle and Cordelia are like, yeah, we're going to go. But I think the reason why Doyle decided to go, I think he's trying to prove to himself and Harriet that he's different, that he's changed.
Yeah.
Which, okay, yes, that makes sense.
And that he's okay with the fact that she's getting remarried. I think that's like, you know, if he goes and he shows his support, it's like it proves that he's fine with it, which, I mean, we all know he's not, but
yeah.
He's doing it like for her, I think.
Mm-hmm. Then we have this weird, weird moment. So we're like in this nice house, residential neighborhood, Richard's family's all sitting together, having dinner together, talking about the upcoming stuff, very traditional family, talking about the strippers, the bachelor party. And the mom is all like, oh my gosh, like, don't forget the stripper. Haha, like, you think I don't know. And Richard's like, I don't want a stripper, mom. Like, again, trying to show like what an upstanding gentleman he is. His cousins are like, is it his cousin? Yeah, his brother and his cousin are absolute pieces of work.
Total bros. Just bros.
And then the dad runs through the list of things they're going to do. And he's like, oh, you know, we've got the man of the hour. Then we drink, bring out the food. We drink. Then we've got the stripper darts. Then we have the ritual eating of the first husband's brains. And then the charades. And then the brother's like, wait.
There's like a pause. Everyone gets really quiet. Yeah. And they're like, what? Charades?
Yeah. So bizarre. There it is.
See, this is like one of those scenes where like, this is like their culture. And they're just like, I want to eat the brains ritual thing. But charades, like, how dare you?
Yeah. Strippers.
It's just like absolutely normal for them.
Oh my gosh. And we're all like, aha, aha, we knew something was up. You episode trying to gaslight us and tell us that Richard was normal. We know better.
So many times.
Like, we're from Sunnydale. We've watched four seasons of Buffy.
He's sketchy. Yeah, there's something. He's, no, exactly. He's
Ken, resurrected. We don't believe him from Adam.
Ken. Didn't Buffy, like, smash his face in?
She cut off his head, I think.
Oh, and then she pushed him back into the gooey hell.
Yeah, he's dead. This is not Ken. Yeah.
We can pretend.
No, pretend it's Ken. Watch him. Well, he doesn't die. Bummer. Okay. So Doyle and Angel are walking into the restaurant for the bachelor party. The brother and the cousin are acting super suspicious and strange, sets off Angel's radar. Richard immediately grabs Doyle and is like, oh, come on in, come on in. And it's just like, okay, Richard, why are you trying to bond with him? And it's like, okay, is he trying to bond because, well, I guess he has to get his consent, but it's just, it's very bizarre, very bizarre.
I think Richard genuinely thinks that he genuinely wants to be doing this.
Yeah, I think
he genuinely is like that, like sugar sweet, like nice. And he wants to get Doyle's like consent, obviously. But obviously it's like for ulterior motives also, because he needs his consent to, like, you know, perform the ritual. But I think he's just like that type of like person. I don't know.
I guess so. That was the one part of this episode that it was hard to get a read on. But I mean, it's not hugely important. There's so many other things going on. So then we have a really interesting conversation between Richard and Doyle, where Richard's like, just tell me about Doyle. I want to know like everything about him. And then we cut to Cordelia and Harriet talking about it, which is very weird that you're at a bachelorette party for yourself and your future spouse, and you're talking about your ex with the girl that he – like, again, optics, it's weird, whatever. We'll just pretend like it's not weird. I need to stop saying this, but it's just very weird. So Cordelia learns so much about Doyle. We find out that he was a third grade teacher, that he was someone who like really took charge, that he worked at like a food bank, like seemed like a really, really great guy. He just knew what he wanted to do. And then the aunt's all like, it's time for pornographic dictionary time. Oh, you're like, what is going on?
So I think with this like exposition of Doyle's past, the vibe that I'm getting, or not the vibe, I think what they're saying to us is that Doyle was a completely different person before he found out that he was part demon, before his like half demon DNA came through. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when he started to kind of spiral, because now he's having this huge like identity crisis, and he doesn't like we've been talking about, he doesn't accept like one half of himself. So I think it's like cool to see that like difference, where it's like, you know, he used to be kind of like Richard, or he was kind of like a stand-up citizen, and then now the Doyle we've been like getting to know over the course of the first few episodes there is one that like drinks and gambles and does all of these things, and now we know why. And it's been like very for me, at least, it's been like satisfying getting to this point, because when they do this reveal, it's like, oh, like this is why Doyle is the way he is. And I think it's really cool. And it's significant. It's not like the stuff with Cordelia last episode where it's like we already knew all of this and it doesn't really hit as hard because it feels almost like shallow. Whereas with Doyle, it's more like, okay, this is not just supernatural, but it's also like very much so like a Doyle as a person thing.
I'm just so confused as to why the writers didn't decide to bring up more of Cordelia's backstory for Room with a View. Like, even the, hey, your mom called. Like, how cool would have been if her parents just showed up in town and said, hey, we want to stay with you. And she's like, oh, I don't have an apartment.
Yeah, and then that
And then she has to go find an apartment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then like her parents are berating her the entire time. You work here, you do this. And her parents are very obviously broke. And so like they can't afford to stay somewhere on their own, but they're like still very snobby. And so then we have like Cordelia gets a mirror held up to her of like how her parents are acting. And that's kind of how she could be acting. You know what I mean? Like I just,
what a great
so much
concept. Yeah. That would have been really cool. And we could have learned so much more about Cordelia's like actual background. Like, Cordelia as a character, not just what Cordelia brings to like the Scooby gang or like how she helps them or how she helps Angel or that she wants to be an actress. Like, how did Cordelia come to be the way she is? We will never know.
Yep. Unfortunately. Spoiler alert. Yeah, it's very clear that the show is trying to move past everything that Cordelia was, her past, and they're trying to just build everything from where she is now, which is a huge shame. And I think they wrote themselves into a corner by not doing that. But also what you were saying earlier about like Doyle and all the backstory, I was just thinking about I Fall to Pieces. Remember we had that moment where Doyle goes to visit, what's the girl's name? Melissa. He goes to talk to Melissa at her work. And we find out that she used to do like, what was it, skydiving and like all this stuff. And then he tells her, one day you'll get back to the person you were before. And I'm like making these connections now. I think Doyle resonated with her in that moment, in that sense that like, she had to stand up for herself. She had to embrace all of that. And I think that Doyle needs to stand up for himself and he needs to embrace everything that he is so he can get back to the person he was before. And yeah, I don't know. I hadn't made that connection until you were just talking about that. So Richard and Doyle are bonding as much as they can. Richard's like, I feel like ever since I learned Harriet was married before, I feel like I've been living in your shadow. You were something I can never be for her. Her first, she'll always love you. And now that you've mentioned that Richard seems like Riley, I feel like this is very applicable. Like once Riley learns about Angel, I feel like this is probably going to be something he's going to talk about. She needs different things now. I know I can make her happy, but I need you to be a part of it. Ooh. And then Angel's coming to Sunnydale. Yeah, this is gonna be interesting. But also like Angel needs to be willing to let Buffy go too, right? Like he's let her go, but not really truly. Like there's still a part of him still holding on to her. So Doyle gives him his consent to something that he has no clue about, which I was like,
yeah man, sure.
And if this means a lot to you, all right, go ahead. Stripper comes in, takes Richard away, effectively making everybody completely distracted. So Angel sneaks out, follows the brother and the cousin as they leave the room, finds them making some sort of, with the dad, some sort of potion up in the attic with a curved knife and saying something. And so Angel calls Cordelia to have Harriet translate. And Harriet's like, okay, sure. Yeah, this is what I want to be doing for my bachelorette party. I'll go check the family library. Meanwhile, like the horny aunt and grandma and stuff have no clue what's going on, are still over there playing pornographic Pictionary while Harriet's over there, like their family. I'm like, oh, like bring the bride in. Like, why are you not including whatever?
Because bachelorette parties are terrible.
They're so awful.
Are they also drinking from like penis straws?
No. Oh. Gosh, so trashy.
Yeah, they're like eating out of like, they have like a penis shaped cake and like penis shaped straws, playing pin the penis on the groom. Like, what is the obsession with penises at bachelorette parties?
So stupid. It's so stupid. Okay, Harriet didn't know that he was gonna have a stripper. And like, here's the thing. If you have a conversation with your significant other about what you're gonna be doing at the bachelorette party, fine. But to have a stripper at your party without talking to your significant other, just because it is a bachelor or a bachelorette party, does not give you full license to go and do things that you normally would not do. Just because it's the night before, the day before, whatever, your wedding. Like, there's obviously some bigger issues that are going on there. And I have like a huge problem with people being like, oh, this is my one last night. I'm going to do whatever it is. Like, just because you haven't put a ring on it doesn't mean that you're not still cheating. You know what I mean? Like, I think that if your significant other doesn't know about this and you know they would be uncomfortable with it, which he clearly does when he says, don't tell, or I hope Harriet doesn't find out about this or whatever. I don't know. That's just a pet peeve of mine. I know it's not a big part of the episode, but I'm just going to say it, darn it. I hate it. I hate that whole tradition.
Sarah's like, screw the stripper.
Not the stripper. She's fine. That's her job. Screw Richard.
I think this type of thing is definitely like of its time. Like that was the big thing at that time. You have a bachelor party and, oh, you've got to have the strippers. And I'm surprised the like ladies didn't have male strippers come to their bachelorette.
I mean, I feel like they would have.
Yeah. So I feel like it's definitely more a thing of the time, and I feel like it's a little bit different now where guys will go on a bachelor party and go to like the strip club and it's not a big deal. But I think back during that time, it was still kind of taboo maybe to be like, oh, I'm going to have a stripper. But it was also almost expected. But it's like, oh, but you can't let your wife know or your fiance know because she won't like it. And I just feel like that's a thing that's like very much of its time. But I agree with you. Like if it's something that your significant other doesn't feel comfortable with, then and you know that, like you should definitely have that conversation because it you're right. It doesn't. Like, just because it's your last night as, like, an unmarried person does not mean that you're allowed. Like, you still have a significant other at the end of the day.
You're still in a relationship. That means something.
Like, it's weird. It is weird where they're like, oh, it's my last night. I'm going to go wild. Like, okay. Like, what does that mean? What does wild go wild mean?
Yes.
How far are you willing to take it?
Yeah. For me, it's like, if you feel like you need to go wild, then you are not ready for marriage, my friend, because it's this idea of like, oh my gosh, I'm shackled. Like I'm, you know, the ball and chain now. It's like, well, if you're still feeling those things, you shouldn't even be in a monogamous relationship.
I think that's big thing, like ball and chain, or like my friend and I were talking the other day and she was saying how, I don't know, it's just people like make comments like, oh, like, the wife likes it when, like, the husband doesn't talk a lot or stuff like that. Or, like, oh, I can't tell my husband what I bought, like, on the credit card. Yeah. You know, it's just – it's stuff like that where it's, like, this whole
– it's toxic.
Like, very toxic, like, idea of marriage where you've got to, like, hide things from each other and –
Yes. Oh, my gosh, yes.
You know, it's almost like the two people, like, don't respect each other and, like, they don't talk and, like – Yeah, it's just – I think that's, like, definitely, like, changing today. But those, like, ideas of marriage – yeah, like, that mentality is, like, ingrained in our society. And you'll still hear people make comments all the time. Like, oh, happy wife, happy life. And it's, like – or you could just not be a piece of shit and just, like
– Yeah. You know. But kind of what I was thinking about is, like, with, like, Harry and Doyle – like, and this idea of, like, marrying Buffy and Angel, I think it almost gives, like, a validity to Buffy and Angel's relationship because a very common thing is, like, oh, they were just too young. It just didn't work out kind of thing. And it's, like, well, if we look at Harriet and Doyle, that's not the reason why it didn't work out for them. It didn't work out for them because ultimately Doyle was not okay with his demon self. Mm-hmm. And I think that points to the real reason that Buffy and Angel broke up. It's not because of age. It's not because they just fell out of love. Yes. Yeah. And at the end of the day, Richard and Harriet don't make it because there's deceit. So it's like, what is worse? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. So I thought that is like the insights it gives into the Buffy and Angel relationship, I think are pretty like,
I think it's also like a commentary on, I think it can be a commentary on, like, you know, they were young, but not in the sense that, you know, their relationship itself was immature or anything like that. Like, I'm talking Harry and Doyle as well as Buffy and Angel, but it's more of, like, the thing that's holding them back is something that they – they have to go on a journey of self-discovery before they're able to give themselves wholly to the other person or be able to kind of overcome those like obstacles that are standing in the way. So I think that that's like really important because that's usually something that happens to you when you're younger and you haven't had the life experience. Obviously with like Buffy and Angel, it's a little bit different because Angel has had more life experience, but you could also argue that he was in like arrested development for all of those years because he's an immortal vampire who spent 100 years in the sewers and Buffy is, you know, younger. But I feel like you said, like in that relationship, it was Angel's vampirism and his demon side that was kind of the roadblock and the curse.
Yep.
Same thing with Doyle. And it's like Doyle and Angel. It's basically saying like Doyle and Angel need to go on this path, their own path of like self-discovery and finding out what their path is without their significant other in order to be able to be better for these people.
Yes. Yes. 100%. Well said. And the fact that Harriet leaves the episode single, not seeing anybody, and Doyle like moves on, mm-hmm. I think is really interesting because they leave that door open of Doyle can eventually get back with Harriet if he does some soul searching. But right now, right. like I love that she doesn't move on to somebody else. It's left with her single, him single, both kind of working on their own stuff. I think that's very poignant.
Definitely.
Wow. Now that we've like analyzed all of that, I feel like we can just end the episode. Who needs to talk about this? Anyway,
the
demon, all right.
The brain eating part? You don't want to talk about the brain eating part point of the episode?
Okay.
So good.
Angel starts fighting the cousin and the brother. Richard continues on with the strippers, like, oh, I hope Harry doesn't hear about that. And Doyle's like, not from me, she won't. I was like, Doyle, you're not helping. Not helping. Doyle. this is when Doyle gives his, like, actual consent. And then Richard's like, hey, he gives his blessing. He consents. And Doyle's like, why is everybody making such a big deal about this? Also, once again, why is Richard saving this to the literal last minute?
Like, I feel like Richard just has no idea what's happening. He's just like, all right.
Flying by the seat of his pants, isn't he?
Oh, my God.
So then they move in. They grab a box. They're like, Doyle, we have something for you. And then throw him in. I'm like, okay, so you guys know that he's unaware. That's not
actual consent. It's like a magician's box. It's like that box that like the magician puts his like assistant in before he like chops her in half.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's probably what it was. It's probably one that they supposed to be laying on its back so you can see their head laying on one side.
Yeah. Yeah. And they like saw you in half.
That's probably exactly what they used. And okay, so what makes this even more weird is the dad and the cousin and the brother seem to clearly know that this is wrong and it's not okay. But Richard's the one that's like, oh, I don't know. I'm a clueless. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. They had to have someone be the bad guy, you know? So they come in, they numb his head, and they're explaining to him that, oh, like, you know, we don't want you to suffer. Like, we're being really kind to you here.
This is a humane sacrifice.
Gosh, Doyle, why are you whining? Like, we're here to help God. You. Back at I don't know, their family house, Harriet's like, hey, like, there's some sort of tradition. Like, what does this mean? And the aunt's like, well, they certainly aren't going to eat your ex-husband's brains. Ha, ha, ha. And I was like, we could have done that better, writers. That was a little weird. That was definitely, like, very convenient for Aunt Martha. How could you?
The mom was just like, oh, my God. How dare you?
Like, not like, you know, oh, this might ruin everything. They're so, like, unaware. Oh, I forgot to say that Angel got pushed out of another window. That's right. And was laying motionless on the street.
Yeah.
So Doyle's over there like, Angel, Angel, the damsel in distress. I love how this is shot. You know, they have him, like, they're marking off his forehead. They have this conversation about the shrimp fork. And pardon me if our ancient ancestors didn't leave behind any former husband brain-eating forks. Get that soup spoon, you moron. Oh, my gosh. And Doyle's like, I don't want to do this. I take back my blessing. Richard throws a little tantrum. You can't take back your blessing. I get the sense that Richard's a little spoiled. And oh, yeah. I think that might explain his cluelessness. Definitely. So then cut to Angel. I love this moment that like he like turns his head and then like swaps into the vamp face. And he's yes, mad. I was like, Angel's you knocked me out. I'm coming
He's
back
coming
in.
Coming for them.
Coming for your door.
He just rips it off the hinges. He's just like, party's over. Boom.
You mess with my friend.
Yeah, this is a great shot.
The dad's like, you brought a vampire to my, or the, I guess the brother. The brother's like, you brought a vampire to my brother's bachelor party. Oh, then we have like a huge fight scene. Nobody lets Doyle out. So he's getting kind of like knocked back and forth until he realizes, oh, wait a minute. I'm part demon.
I'm a demon.
I can get out. Like, why was I sitting here this entire time? Like, would he have let them cut into his brain before his like sense of self-preservation kicked in?
But also like, what is his level of strength when he's a demon though? Like, is he actually strong or is he just like a little bit stronger than when he's human Doyle?
Or is he just a pokey porcupine thing that can, like,
yeah, like, you know, he just headbutts people and, like, makes holes in their faces.
I don't know. Then Harriet and Cordelia run right in. And Doyle is very intentionally trying to kind of like scooch out of there so that Cordelia doesn't see his demon side, his demon face. I'm actually like really surprised that that didn't come up in Harriet and Cordelia's conversation where she mentions the main reason why they broke up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it seems very odd that that didn't come up.
Seems very like a plot hole.
Mm-hmm. Richard's like, oh gosh, why could Harriet be here? Man, it's got to be that stripper, not the fact that I'm going to eat Doyle's brains.
He's like, no ladies here. This is a men's event.
Yeah, he just downgraded from a supervillain to a petulant child, man-child. Yeah. Don't like him at all.
He's like, no girls at the sleepover.
The stripper wasn't my idea, Pook. Oh, I swear. She's like, there was a stripper? And I immediately wrote in my notes, yeah, that marriage ain't going to last if they even get there.
Oh.
And Cordelia's like, well, you shouldn't be trying to eat my friend's brains. Snap, snap, you horrible, ugly demon people. And then Doyle sits up. She sees him. What does she grab? Like a trash can lid? Oh, it's a tray. Just like starts wailing on him. And Angel, bless his dear, sweet, pure heart, runs up, doesn't out Doyle. He just says, no, 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 it's okay. It's safe. It's safe. And like gives Doyle the time to like talk about it.
Cordelia's so confused. She's like, why are you stopping me?
And then Doyle just pokes up behind her with his normal face. And all of a sudden she's like hugging him like, oh my gosh, are you okay? All right. So Harriet goes in front of Richard. Is like, I want a straight answer. Were you going to eat his brains? Richard is like, yeah, we were going to. And Harriet says, you are going to start out our life together with deceit. And Doyle's like, she's missing the point, isn't she? And Angel's like nodding his head like, yeah, come on, Harriet. It's about eating the brains, not the deceit. But no, actually, it is the deceit thing. So they're like, we don't flaunt our beliefs, but we still hold to some of the ancient traditions. They pull out the whole, you can't talk to Uncle John like that.
I love how she like calls them out because I feel like that is such a relatable thing for someone who like comes from like a very cultured family. And you're just like, you guys, like, I don't know. It's like when you grow up in like a different world than your family that comes from like a different culture or has different customs and they're very like attached to that, and you grow mm-hmm. up somewhere that's completely different and you grow up with those customs and culture mm-hmm. and you get to a certain age where it's just like, no, like why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just I like that she like calls it out, like, why are you being hypocritical? Like, you're not even that devoted to your culture, but you're choosing to do this very like terrible ritual. Like, for what reason?
So Richard's like, hey, but unless we complete the ritual, my family is not going to consent to this marriage. And that's when Harriet's like, oh, it's your family versus me and you're choosing them. So many big issues that they probably should have figured out and aired out before they even got to this point. But I digress. So Harriet gives him the engagement ring, walks out. Okay, question. Why did Angel not just like try to kill these people and like he leaves them? Like, they already said that they adhere to some of these stricter, more barbaric things. So what other customs that possibly harm people do they still practice? It's just interesting that Angel doesn't destroy them. He just lets them live. So it's just, I don't know. It's interesting.
I think it has more to do with like setting up this world as more like morally gray. And it's like, yes, maybe there are demons that don't need to die immediately because they aren't an immediate threat or a threat to society. Like these demons are, like, they look pretty much like in general, they're like amicable. And I feel like we're going to see a lot more of this in like later episodes. So I think it's just kind of setting up like a more morally gray world where it's like, okay, unlike on Buffy, as soon as you see a demon on this show, you can't automatically assume that they're evil. Like, there are air quotes good demons out there, or like demons that are not just plain evil.
Yeah.
Which I think fits in better with like this universe. Whereas on Buffy, it's a lot more black and white at this point, especially with like the introduction of the initiative on there, which I think will shake things up a little bit in terms mm-hmm. of moral ambiguity, which I think will mm-hmm. be cool. But I think this show has like started off that way from the get-go.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it is to show that it is more morally gray. But I don't know. It's an interesting conversation, like one that Angel probably didn't have the time to sit down and be like, well, should I kill them? I mean, they could be doing this, or I could just let them go. Yeah. You know, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting to see if they'll delve into that later
on. But you also have to think about, like, Angel has lived a very long time, so it's more likely than not that he's come across demons like this before.
That's true.
And he's never had a reason to kill them before, so it's like...
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It's different because Angel's different, I guess, because Angel is also a demon, so maybe he understands a bit more that, like... more gray area.
Yes. Maybe he's like, you're not an immediate threat. Is punishment enough that Harriet just walked down on you? So we'll just
yeah.
let it go.
Yeah.
So then we cut to Angel Investigations, and in Doyle is sitting and moping. And I love that we have Cordelia and Angel on the other side talking about, like, it just feels like a complete reversal of roles. Normally they're sitting there talking about Angel being by himself.
And this is also a direct parallel to how the next episode is going to start. A little spoiler, but this is like the same exact shot, except that next episode it's going to be Angel that they're going to be looking in on.
Yep. So he spoke to her. Yeah, didn't go well. I think she just needs some time. I love this moment with Cordelia. She's like, all right, I'm going to go out there. And she, in her very brash, abrupt way, says, Doyle, are you going to become loser pining guy like full time now? Because, you know, we already have one of those around the office. Well, the Angel and Doyle are like, hey, he can get away with it. He's tall and look at the way clothes hang on him. But you, Angel's like, okay, we're cheered up now. He adds himself in there too.
Thanks for your help. That's enough.
But then she says, you can't live in the past. You've got to move on. Let it go. Forget it. Tomorrow is another day. Did I mention letting it go? And she says, you'll get through this, Doyle. Nice guys don't always finish last. And I was like, wow, this is actually really good. Like, well done, Cordelia. Pleasantly surprised. And then he says, you think I'm a nice guy? And she says, I think it. I say it. That's my way.
And we know that to be true.
Doyle doubles over in pain, and we don't even see her at first. We hear, and it, like, Buffy's grunts. We all know exactly what she sounds like when she's fighting.
Yeah.
We know it's her. We see her face, and Doyle, man, you could tell he doesn't want to tell Angel. He knows.
He's like, oh, crap.
Angel's like, what did you see? And then we cut to black.
Ooh,
here it comes. Here it comes, man.
We all know what's coming.
New listeners, new watchers, you don't know what's coming, and I'm so excited for you.
Juicy and spicy.
So, yeah, we've got some good things coming up next week. You guys can listen to us over on Becoming Buffy. We're talking about Pangs. Well, at least me, Tabby, and Leah are with a special guest, Alexandra. Angel will be headed over to Sunnydale, where we'll be talking about that. And then the next week, the week after that, we'll be back here on Angel for another special Buffy crossover. And Tabby and Leah are going to be here, which is going to be so fun. It's going to be so fun to have them here and just, yeah, I'm trying not to spoil. It's going to be a good episode. It's going to be fun. We've got lots of good things planned. It's going to be
very, very fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, buckle up, boys and girls, because the next couple of episodes are, they are good.
The next two are like heavy, at least like on our podcast here. The next two are,
Yep. But then I feel like we're really like rolling in the season. I feel like the show's starting to pick up. But then it
gets kind of like fun a little bit because we get to meet somebody new.
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited. But until then, guys, let us know your thoughts in this episode. Do you like Doyle's character development? What did you think about Cordelia? Do you feel like we've turned a corner with her character? What do you think about all the parallels between Harry and Doyle and Buffy and Angel? What do you think about our theory about Richard and Riley? Oh, they both have our names.
Ooh. Okay. I feel like this theory is like legit, though. It's pretty valid.
Yeah, we're going to be pointing back to this one episode for like the next couple of seasons. So be sure to follow us on Instagram, you guys. Got lots of fun stuff coming up. Don't forget to enter into our giveaway. And we will see you guys next time for I Will Remember You. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.